Well, good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, January 9th, 2020, and we are gathered in the BCC conference room for our county administration workshop. It's 9 a.m. First up is Department of Revenue, or MAP, Intergovernmental Agreement Contract, DOR-003-20, with the State of Oregon for digitization of cadastral maps. Hey, that was easy. So, how's it going, Chris?
Good. Chris Barton, Chief Deputy Assessor's Office. So, yeah, this is a part of an ongoing statewide initiative for digitizing our cadastral maps. And so we're just asking the state for about $50,000 here for to fund our cartographer, Jeff Campbell, who does this work as a part-time FTE. He's 0.80 FTE, and his entire salary is paid out of this grant to convert our old hand-drawn Mylar maps to get them updated in our ArcGIS program to get in the 21st century. So that's basically what it is. It's part of a multi-year project. We expect to only ask for one or possibly two more grants from the state before the whole statewide comes to a close.
Is $50,000 all you could ask for on a calendar year?
Or? No, we actually, it's unlimited what we could ask for. Okay. It's just that's what we need.
Okay.
And you got it.
Yep.
How close are we?
So the grant initiative and the funds end is planned to end with one more request in a year from now. But there is talk about extending. Some of the counties are wanting to do other projects that are related. So there's talk about possibly getting the legislature to extend the sunset. So, but we are, in terms of the workload, the state or the countywide project will be completed on December 31st, 2021, with funds that will be hopefully approved in December of 2020.
Okay.
What does cadastral mean?
Oh, good question. It has to do with keeping track of who pays taxes on land. It's a cadaster.
Well, that's right, in your alley. Yeah.
Not a cadaver. You're saying something different?
Yeah, cadaster. It's actually kind of interesting. It goes back to Roman times and Napoleon. It's basically maps for tax purposes.
That makes it even more important. It came from Roman times.
Okay, that's right.
Well, there's some history there.
Do you want to use Roman numerals?
No.
The Romans fared really well, didn't they?
For a while. Okay. Well,
I mean, if there's any questions, I can feel whatever you want to know. We're about 10 years into an 11-year project. So
this is a continuation.
We're at the point where we're in the caboose right now. So
right.
The train left the station many years ago. But.
Okay. So is there a decision by the board that needs to be made just to endorse it?
Yeah, basically it just needs to be approved by the board, signed. And
okay. I don't see any reason not to move that one forward.
In the past, it's typically
consent calendar. Most
typically
likely,
it's just going to consent
it's
calendar.
Budgeted as a repeating, ongoing, annual thing.
Correct.
So,
okay.
I will be at a conference next week. Would you want Connie to come and speak to it with it being on a consent calendar?
I think if she just wrote up something that we could.
One of us could read.
If it's an ongoing thing.
Perfect.
We shouldn't have to go back to square one and explain all the stuff.
We haven't always had to do presentations on consent calendar, so there may be a time that we don't have to again.
Yeah, that's right. But I know the board at different times have done different things, so what are you going to do is fine with me.
Always the right thing, I'm sure.
Yes.
and in your explanation, be sure you define cadastral so that Chairman can read that.
Okay.
So. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. On to item 2A, Fairgrounds, contract for personnel services with Place Studios, LLC, for the Fairgrounds Master Plan.
Hello, good morning.
Director Martin, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
So, it's going to be up on the screen as well. But wanted to come and talk to you guys today about the process of doing the master plan that we have been working on. Actually, Mark has been working on this for several years, so we're excited to actually be down to the hopefully the final conversation. We have been negotiating with Place Studio, which is out of the Portland area. They were who we chose to go with after the RFQ process. And we have agreed with through our legal department as well that we are at a place where we can move forward and start our master plan. So really the point of us doing a master plan, just to kind of talk a little bit about why we're doing this, really we're trying to develop a roadmap for really developing the fairgrounds into a multi-use facility, that all of our buildings, the different properties, are not single use and limited to just the fair or just this one single use. That how do we develop our fairgrounds into a way that we can actually get multiple uses year round out of every single facility we have. Wendy, can you flip it to the next one? That's my cheat sheet. Thank you. Really what we expect to come out of this master plan is analysis of the current uses and conditions of the properties, identify any existing limitations preventing the achievement of our long-term goals. We have to look at the picture of where we're at to decide where we can go. We want to explore the potential historical significance of the buildings, of the different properties, of the different uses, to make sure that when we prepare for the future, that we are honoring that history base that our fairgrounds is. Obviously, we have over 100-year history at the fairgrounds, and we are not looking to remove that gem, that jewel that makes that history very important to what we're doing. We want to develop a best practices. This term essentially means, you know, what are ways that we can really develop strong practices in the sense to get the most out of every building, whether it's parking, whether it's scheduling, whether it's, you know, online reservations. How can we develop some best practices to move forward in a way to maximize the potential for success? Most importantly, we need this plan to be adaptable to long-term economic sustainability. We are talking about five phases with three-year increments, and that 3 years is set up that way because it matches the terms of our fair board so that we can have some short-term goals that to know, are we on track? And to make sure that we're in the path. And then at the end of that 3 years, how is this working? Where do we need to redevelop? Are we on the path that we really wanted to be on? And so that short-term phase was really important in the setup of this process. Really, what we're asking them to achieve here is how, when, where, why do we restore, renovate, or rebuild to develop the property into multi-use facilities to increase activity on the fairground, as well as accessibility for all of our community and an overall beauty and aesthetic, so that really this piece of property has the potential to be a gem for our community. Ultimately, we're going to create a clear and concise picture, establishing a vision to guide us into this path of where we're going. And then, frankly, a master plan is a vision left for not just us today as we move forward, but for our future community leaders, staff, fair board members, volunteers, to see the long-term picture. I think that one of the biggest obstacles that I faced coming in was, you know, my questions were, okay, where are we going? And there was no one to answer the question in the room. It was, well, where do you want to go? And, you know, that's, you know, great in the aspect of, well, let's really get this process started. Let's create this plan so that, you know, in time when there are new faces coming in that are eager to make that impact, that they really see the this long-term opportunity that can be. We don't expect the master plan to be exact at the end of the 15 years. We know that times and things will change and you know, the process will change. But it will definitely give us a roadmap at the possibilities so that when we make those investments, that we know we're on the path of where we're trying to get. You know, but ultimately as well, the master plan is going to lend some credibility. When we're going out and we're looking for funding and we're looking for the bigger grants, they want a copy of our master plan. That's part of that process. Where are you guys going? And I think that this is the next and final step of really showing our community, as well as these grantor opportunities, that the county is serious about the success of the fairgrounds and that we are headed in a positive direction, that the community has been involved in establishing, and that, you know, it will really generate an excitement. And it won't just be one person sitting in there going, oh, we're going to do, and we are going to, and you know, and this, we got this idea too. It's going to be, no, this is our roadmap. This is where we're going. So we are really excited about the potential of having this master plan, because we really believe it's the key to really unlocking the next step for where the fairgrounds needs to go. So did you get a copy of the actual contract? I didn't know if that came.
Yeah, I've got one of this. Yeah. It's in the packet.
Are there any questions?
No, it looks like it looks at seismic sustainability of the buildings. Does it include the impact of the horse racing now?
Absolutely. So,
right. I don't know if I saw that specifically, but it might be.
It won't be specific, but obviously horse racing is part of the activities that happen on the fairgrounds. But what it will do is really look at the picture as a whole. And, you know, we're not going to develop a plan for horse racing. That's obviously their own entity in that aspect. But we're going to, our master plan is going to acknowledge that usage.
Right, that impact.
As well as the additional usages that we have. Because we have to kind of really create an ebb and flow so that, you know, horse racing has the opportunity to develop and grow, just as the square dancers have the ability to grow, just as our community events that we're adding into the fairgrounds have the opportunity to grow. So all the activities and uses that we currently use the fairgrounds for will be definitely looked at in that big picture.
Good. Any other comments or questions? Sir?
Yeah, I just, you know, coming in here 3 years ago, and boy, it was doom and gloom 3 years ago. Doom and gloom. The roof's blown off, everything's doing, it's all gone to hell in a handbasket. And to see and to watch, and because as a liaison, I've been more of an observer than a participant, but just to watch that fair board turn the corner, and instead of looking at who's snapping at the door, looking at other doors to open. And gosh, I just, you know, and this is just part of it. I'm kind of glad it took your committee this long to really weed this thing out, because now we're pretty, not real sure, but we're pretty sure of where horse racing is going to go and how big it's going to get, but what its limitations will be. Mm-hmm. And that's all in here. You know, like we said at the beginning, if you don't have a master plan, you can have all the grant applications you want, but it's just begging for money at that time, right. And you've gone from begging for money to asking for money for a specific purpose.
Absolutely.
And that really means a lot. So, you know, to the whole fair board, you know, it's just been fun watching you guys work through this. It really has. So I'm glad it's coming to an end, and I think it's going to be great. I really do. I see a bright future for the fairground. And a modernization, too, you know, and the modernization, I think, that is, well, a long time coming to where, you know, it's multi-purpose, more multi-purpose than just event, one event driven. It's a floral building, but that doesn't mean that you can only put flowers in it.
Right.
At fair time, you know, it can be all kinds of different things. So.
It was an interesting opportunity I had to go to that economic development that the Rotary had invited me to. And initially I was sitting there going, why am I here? Like, I'm looking around the room going, why am I here in this room today? But as I sat and I listened and I really started thinking about the economic impact that the fairgrounds has. Mm-hmm. We have a strong economic impact, you know, as well as supporting the agricultural aspect of course, what everyone expects from us. We do support businesses, small businesses. They use us for cooking their wares in the commercial kitchen and selling. They obviously sell right on our grounds. They use our facilities for training, for classes, for educational purpose. And on top of that, there's the tourism aspect that we bring to the area as well. And all of those three areas are going to continue to grow if we can find, you know, I always joke, enough, you know, room in the dishwasher for one more glass. You know, how do we range this so that we are using maximum capacity in the best way possible? And I think sometimes to find those answers, you have to, you know, step away from the forest to be able to see the trees. And that's where having somebody else come in and really look at everything objectively is going to be a huge key to unlocking, you know, our own tunnel vision of only seeing what we see.
Well, the fairgrounds there for a long time had the stigma that it was a rundown neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what people were looking at. That's just an old rundown neighborhood. And this revitalizes that.
Yeah.
This turns that around and keeps the historic aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So I like it.
Any other questions?
Has the YMCA developed any kind of plan for their future?
Well, they have a new CEO mm-hmm. in the Y, and I know that he is working on a variety of different things. So I don't know that he has an actual plan developed, but I know that there's a lot of conversations about the what ifs and the possibilities. So I don't think, considering he's fairly new to his position as well, that we're going to be too far off with getting some real vision from that group as well.
Yeah, they'll be asked the questions from this consultant about their futures and impact on the fairgrounds.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So everything that is literally every piece of our puzzle will be examined, you know, and really looked at how it really can come together in a way. You know, we're not just talking about a specific building here and there.
Right.
We're talking about, let's look at this big picture. And then once we've really identified the big picture, then we can take it down to, okay, what's the next step that is going to be able to then, you know, start producing some revenues so that we can then take that next step. So, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure. We have buildings with no internet. You know, we've got, there are some things that we just have to do. We have some plumbing issues in all of our bathrooms that we'll have to address before we really start bringing in people, you know. So there's things that are there that we kind of work around because we know that they're there. But it's time to put it all together and figure out where we need to go.
Commissioner Morgan?
The one thing I don't see in the assumptions I see that about the seismic and stuff, but the electrical concerns of the whole premises as far as being able to handle modern stuff.
All of that, when we start talking about the electricals, will come down to when we start talking about specific buildings.
Okay.
As far as, like, the transformers, we're not talking about adding necessarily anything down the road, but when we start talking about specific purposes and growth, and those things will be addressed.
But the electrical issues are not limited to buildings. I mean, you'll have outdoor events or different things that are, we lost this section, we lost that section, and it's not just buildings.
Correct.
The other thing that comes to mind is the handicap parking the last couple of years could not be the most...
Couldn't get any worse.
Correct. And if you look at that piece of property, it looks like it's a former building. Mm-hmm. That there's some foundations in there. But, I mean, you've got some pretty substantial, I mean, even just making sure that that portion is, can we smooth it out? Can we do something with, is it the right, configuration. Is the fence where it needs to be? Is the parking where it needs to be? I don't know, all that kind of stuff.
So that will all be kind of addressed in that big picture. Uh-huh. It's not going to talk about the fair event itself. So the fair event, which
I'm
is
just talking
where,
the
we use, where we utilize that, yeah. That parking lot that you're talking about, this will be more like, you know, what do they call it? 30,000.
30,
yeah, the 30,000, you know, foot view. And then when we come down and we start talking, that will still be up to the fair board and, you know, going, okay, you know, we've got a fair, you know, coming in. We need to address the handicap parking. What's a better solution to what we have?
And that hasn't always been handicap parking. That's only been the last 2 years that that's the handicap parking. It's... The issue is, if we're going to beautify the inside, and the nearest thing to the gate and the track is the most stumbly, crumbling old foundation now turned into a parking lot and not addressed as the bigger picture, we've missed an opportunity to say, is this the best usage of this? And so I'm hoping that everything that's on your footprint, whether the YMCA, that parking lot, the electrical from, you know, the whole thing, that all of that can be looked at as a whole is the needs.
It's going to be property line to property line. I mean, there isn't anything that we're leaving out, you know, in that big overall view.
Okay.
And now that, you know, on some of the specific needs for specific events and things of that nature, they won't necessarily be addressed. But the fact that there's an area that is underutilized, is used a couple times a year, that needs to be resurfaced, you know, that is something that can definitely be considered. But what this is going to really look at is, here's the overall usage, and here are some, you know, the potential of what it could be, and here's the steps to get there. And so it's not like they're going to come in and identify every problem that we have. Some of that we know. You know, they're really coming in to create this picture, this roadmap, to get us to where we need to be.
I hear you. I just want to make sure that those things that we know don't get lost in the process. I mean, every fair I hear, you know, John 1, 2, and 3 running 20 different directions from let's fix this, let's fix that. And part of that beautification is just making sure that we plan for it all. And you guys, I know it's in good hands. I know you guys will make sure it's all there. I just want you to know you have my support in doing that, too.
Commissioner Morgan, I could not agree more with your assessment of parking and all that. You know, that's been kind of my purview for the last 3 or 4 years. And it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And we're having to address it in different ways, especially with racing coming in now, and it's diminishing the old parking. It's something that we have to address in a big way. And I think the master plan is going to be a way to get down that road. Once we get that identified, then we can start looking at some of the other possibilities. And I totally agree. I can just imagine some elderly person trying to get into their car and they slip and fall because of a hole next to their car. Scares the heck out of me.
Yeah, half the time I'm taking the cart out the gate just to get them straight to their car so they don't have to walk from the gate to their...
I agree.
You know, and I think it's just part of it is the master plan, and that's it, is what you guys are focused and working on, that this other stuff doesn't get missed along the way.
Well, you know, we have a wide variety of things that we are dealing with out there all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, we're working on the master plan, it doesn't mean that everything else gets shoved to the side. It means that we're working through this process, but in the same time, we're working these other processes as well. And so the conversation about that parking lot is definitely a conversation that, you know, we can have. Obviously, horse racing uses that area as well for parking. And so, you know, we can start having a conversation basically on how do we fix this. But it's not, I don't expect that, you know, the master plan is going to come back and say, hey, at fair time, this is not appropriate parking. I think it's going to be a bigger view. But we all know that we got to fix that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's about keeping that on the radar along with everything else that we're doing.
Well, and parking does have to be addressed in the master plan. If we're losing half the Y, and if at some point, say, the recommendation is to move the entrance to a different site and there's not parking near there, movement of people. Look at Disneyland. It used to be that you can park and just walk to the gate. You now have to park in a parking lot across the way and get a shuttle or something else like that. So as growth happens, you revision, you replan, you change how things traditionally happen. But while you're here, do you know when the siding on the arena, when that next phase is going to happen, or is it waiting for the master plan stuff too?
No, it is not waiting for the master plan. I am waiting for the RFP to be released.
Okay, cool.
Hey, would you give us your name for the record?
Lonnie Johnson.
Thanks.
I'm board chair.
Board chair. Thank you. Yes. Please introduce yourself.
My name's Mark Korberstein, Fair Board.
Thank you.
Commissioners, thank you for having us here today again. The master plan is not just another company coming in and giving us their opinion. Part of the process, and the most important part of the process, is in making sure that you and everyone else has an opportunity to input your feelings of what the vision for the grounds are and what your concerns and issues are. And so finding community leaders, member users of the fairgrounds that see it every day, make sure they can give their input to build the final product and the end of this problem when we get it done. It gives us that good, viable guideline. But by no means does it alleviate our due diligence. We still have issues today that need to be worked on, the siding on the arena, safety issues. However long it takes us to make the improvements to bring it up to a state-of-the-art facility, we still have day-to-day issues that need to be resolved. And no, we're not going to push those down the road to wait for the end of the master plan. The safety and security of the people using the fairgrounds is number one. Making money off of that is number two. So we do have our priorities right, I hope.
Appreciate that. Commissioner Dion?
I like the three-year snapshots. Not taking it all in one big chunk, but setting some three-year goals for your board to achieve. And that one, for clarification, this only includes the fairgrounds property. We, the county, owns a tremendous amount of property out there, and we have a tendency to lump it all in. Mm-hmm. That where OSU is, oh, that's part of the fairgrounds. That where parks is, that's part of the fairgrounds. Where public works is, oh, that's all part of the fairgrounds. And it's not. Mm-hmm. And that is not in this plan. It's just the fairgrounds portion of county-owned property out in that vicinity. So just want to make sure that when somebody pipes up and says, well, you didn't do the parking lot in front of the Oregon State OSU Extension Service, that's not in this. That doesn't have anything to do with this. So I just want to make for clarification that we're pointing at the fairgrounds, not the surrounding property that the county owns. The citizens of the county own it. Tremendous asset out there, but that is not all in this deal here.
Correct.
And that would include the Allen Creek property that's along the river is not in this? Right, okay.
Once we get the company hired and they meet with us for our initial meeting, they'll be laying out the parameters. And some of those, the most logical question they're going to ask is, okay, what are we working on? And so that will be very clearly delineated for them so that there's no backpedaling later to say, oh, we didn't know.
Yeah. Sounds good.
However, at some point in time, you're feeling particularly magnanimous, we'd be certainly glad to entertain some of that other property.
Now, would you put that in words that I can understand? You're thinking if you can get it? Is that what you're saying?
If I can take just
whatever
a second.
Whatever magnanimous means. You know? Save it for that side of the table, Lonnie. Not maybe I'll carve this out.
If I can take
out.
Just a second, I would very much like to thank Board of Commissioners for reappointing me and allowing me to stick with the Fair Board for another 3 years and to continue the growth. I very much appreciate it.
We'd like to see people complete things if they can.
Yep.
And there's still excitement there. So one thing that I called all three of you and just said, are you still in this?
Yes,
every one of you said we're in it to win it, so that was good, and let's do it.
I think it also goes, again, to just kind of the excitement that's happening right now as we start to really move forward and start getting things done.
People are starting to see things happen. That's good.
So, I also would like to ask that the county look at helping pay for part of the portion of this master plan. I think that there is an opportunity.
I knew there was something.
for the county, you know, on an operational fairgrounds. That's what we've been tasked to do, is to kind of, you know, go out there, get it done, you know, figure out how to make things work. And we have, and we are doing that every day, and we're continuing to grow. When we start looking at capital improvement, capital projects, what we lack is a large standalone source of revenue that we can pull from, we can bond against, that we can really look at these capital projects and grow. And I think that it would go a long way for the community, for funders out there, for grantors out there, to see that the county is coming in and helping support as we look at these capital improvements. We're not talking about everyday, day-to-day operations. We're talking about the big picture. And the fairgrounds is going to absolutely be a jewel for the county, and something that the county can look at and say, hey, we have something special here that is not only, you know, beautiful, growing, and servicing the needs, it's having an economic impact on our county, and we were definitely a part of and supportive and, you know, kind of helped, you know, make this get started. And so, you know, while, you know, yes, I'm here asking, you know, to help go into this contract, I'm also going to ask that you guys help fund the project as well.
Commissioner Dion.
I appreciate you planting the seed, but that's a big conversation that we'll have. But I think we need to have it.
Correct. We can take it under advisement, but I think we have to look at a few different options on how that would happen, and especially with some of the other departments still not funded to capacity of where they are. And I know we have come along the last couple of years with some of the other ones to try to help. And we would love to try to find ways to get that stable.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that we have an answer today.
Okay.
Right. Economic development funds are a possibility for part of that. How much are you asking for? I see this is almost $70,000 for the contract.
I also see this is a pass-through.
Mm-hmm.
Pass-through funds to the county, 68,910. Where is it passing through from?
Well, I don't know.
That's not pass-through. That's how much we have to pay.
Whatever cost is, or pass-through funds to the county. Oh,
so
the, or. I didn't see the
options. Oh, okay. I might have done something wrong.
Yeah. How much money does the fair receive from the state, and is those monies just for the fair event?
It is for the fair event. It's just under $55,000. I think it's $53,000 and change.
Mm-hmm.
And that is designated to go towards the fair event itself.
I know that there's, I don't know if you guys have been getting emails from commissioners from the east side. There's a big push to come along in this and try
Nash,
to ask for more, yeah.
Is Commissioner Nash still heading that up?
I believe so.
I'm
going
to give him a holler later on today.
They're wanting a partnership with FFA and 4-H and FAIR to get the funding, but if that's restricted to the FAIR event.
Mm-hmm. They were working on it, a bill that would give master plan money to FAIRs
mm-hmm.
last year, and I don't believe that it actually made it through.
Commissioner Nash, I think, was $100,000. Per county,
well,
wasn't
and I,
it, there's that had fairs.
I do think it's the partnership of fairs and the ORS that dictates how fairs are run and how the properties are done and all that other kind of stuff. I think it would be beneficial for commissioners to attend the fair conference and for us all to become aware of it. There was I was asked by a previous fair manager a couple of years ago when I was liaison to look at a fair board member removal. Well, there's a whole process laid out in ORS of how that has to be done. And, you know, it's one of those things that it's not just an advisory board. It's not just a it's unique. And there's so much more to it that I think that we would all benefit in understanding the nuances and how to support it and do the most with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage us to look at that because I think that maybe there's something we can learn of how to utilize more or how to do more or what we can do. And once we have the education, then we know how to turn around and educate the community and get the community on board. But I know 4-H is growing. I know that is a unique partnership too with a fair event, because it's a lot of usage, but not necessarily in line with everything else the fair does. So how does that partnership work? How does that, we know that 4-H kids have a tendency to be the, some of the least pulling of society's resources later on. They're contributors versus receivers. Mm-hmm. And they're less likely to go in the criminal justice, you know, system and stuff like that. So definitely want to support it as a preventative pro-social activity. And they're learning business skills. They're learning work skills and job and stuff like that. But anyhow, I think that there's an opportunity for us to learn so we can be a better support. So I'm going to throw that pitch in.
Well, and when would we talk about how the general fund or whatever can support this?
I think that there's a few asks right now on the economic development, and I think that it would be appropriate to sit down with finance and kind of make out a plan with the whole thing and what's already been budgeted, because we're 6 months into the budget year. Right. What's pending still? What's, you know, it's flexible, kind of, but we also heard no on one of the asks this year, that no, it cannot be used for that. Okay, so what are the restrictions? And let's make sure that we can utilize that right. But there's other topics that have come up recently that may affect. So we also don't know the long-term impacts of what's going to happen with the TMB racing contract. And that revenues to the fair, you know, one of the biggest things you've talked about, a plan for that, is a personnel that can help with the master events and different stuff like that. So it's not leaving money necessarily for other things.
That money and that personnel was already budgeted. It had nothing to do with TMB racing.
Oh, okay.
So that I already had its contingency in my budget for this coming year, and that adding the personnel did not impact the overall budget.
But until that contract is past the first couple phases of we're in or we're not, it's not really something we can rely on of what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I hear you there. Mm-hmm. But this is part of why I want a workshop. And this is a year ago when I said, I think we need to have some finance sessions and start talking through. I think we still do. And kind of bigger picture, bigger plan of where are we going as a county? What are we working towards? We've just had a fairly big ask from airports. That's a 5-year commitment, or roundabout from CEDC over airports. But how many more of those type of asks? When is the next Jubilee Park or security system in CJ? Or what are these all other partnerships? The newest one I've been asked is that we should partner with Solid Waste Agency and put trash receptacles in Wolf Creek so people can have free dumpsters to keep the dumping in the forest down. Okay, where would we pay for that? You know, all these asks, where's the boundaries? So I think if we sat down and actually, even before budget season starts, us commissioners have one of those days that what are all these things that we're having to take into consideration, and where does it come out for the sake of a plan? And what's the cost of the movement going to be when the police department moves out? And where is that coming? You know, all these things that are pending. If we don't have a document like a strategic plan or a master plan for us as a county that says what all we have in the pending, it's just like what you said. Where are we going and what's next?
Right.
And what idea comes up along the way?
Well, I think that, you know, and I agree with you. And a big part of that in those conversations as well, you know, I know that these processes are happening. The fairgrounds is not a participant in those processes because we are removed. And, you know, while we are over here and we have made this turnaround from the gloom and doom and, yeah, no, we're not, you know, the gates aren't closing, but we're talking about making that solid jump from here where we are and things are looking good to here where things are great and we're really proud as a county of what we've accomplished.
And I can tell you, I believe that's all of our goal. It's a matter of when and how we get there and what's the right avenue. So I mean, all of us remember the fairgrounds for football games and graduations and big concerts and all that other kind of stuff. Fortunately, I'm old enough, I can say I remember, right?
I don't remember. I remember motorcycle racing out there is what I remember.
Well, I've been to graduations and football games out there. And, you know, it's...
Poles. Yeah.
I remember those, too. I'm just saying that...
You're getting there.
If you don't remember, there may be a different reason why you don't remember.
No, because I never went out to the football games out there. Football games were at the high school. But
not for North Valley and Hidden Valley.
But there wasn't a North Valley and Hidden Valley in my past.
Yeah.
So you're getting there.
I was born before the high schools were built. I'll just say that. So either way, our goal is to support the fair.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it is a source of community pride, and it's something that there's been a lot of push to say, move it out of the middle of this urban center. What is a county rural fair doing in the middle of town? Well, there's other counties that have moved them out of the where they had them traditionally to get them out in the country, and it's had an impact on attendance and bottom line and different stuff. There is something about that space, even the map on the wall where the track used to go the other way. You know, it's just kind of like, whoa, I didn't know that history. And there's an opportunity to build on, this is where we were, this is where we're going through this master plan opportunity.
Right.
And I absolutely support that. I want the entire county to not just be existing, but thriving.
Right.
But that's just it. The fair is a piece of that bigger puzzle, and I think it represents that we have had some momentum lately of trying to work as a whole community,
mm-hmm.
and we're getting there. But we also have to take into consideration the other stuff. So... I would love to help try to find that solution with you. I think that's part of why we're there, is to try to find those solutions of how do we get to that point. It's why we support Youth Pathways Project. We think that developing job skills in our youth is going to impact our economy and our community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a school district issue. It's a community issue. So you have my support.
Mm-hmm.
We have to figure out the plan to get there. We have to figure out the how. But the goal is the same.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. All right.
So you need to work on a master plan to figure out how to pay for our master plan.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that that has to be the bigger, longer discussion, but, I mean, we do have to have a discussion about where that money could come from and all that other kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate your time today. Any other questions?
Just one last thing, if I can throw down this. And all this is really good conversation. I appreciate the support. We have an opportunity to turn a corner, and that's we've gone from the doom and gloom, fourth, fifth time we said that. But right now we've become accepted by the community as our fairgrounds again.
Mm-hmm.
People who live here in the city, in the county, nearby, it's their fairgrounds again. What they haven't seen is that for every person that travels to Grants Pass to attend someplace, some event at the fairgrounds, and it's not a local, it brings X amount of revenue into the community. I think there was some tourism number I saw, $75 per person that travels over 30 miles. So,
but they can travel that in our county.
That's true. That's true, too. So as we can develop that next step, and that is not only are people proud of their pair of socks they pull on, which is kind of what we are now,
mm-hmm.
is how do we make it so people want to come to us, that we can improve the things we provide to our own people, and that the hotels start getting more tax-paying residents at the hotels, more gas is being sold, more groceries are being sold, more restaurants are being used, and all the business and property taxes they pay come to the county. So we have a way of helping build what you guys can do with other projects in the future, too. So it's very symbiotic.
I'll sum it up. We're in your corner.
Okay.
Yep. I second that.
So, real quick, do you have this budgeted right now?
This was not in our budget. We have the revenues to cover, but we did not have this budgeted as an expense item. We'd
so
have to do a supplemental budget.
If we send this, okay, but you have the revenue to cover it if we send it forward next week.
Correct.
Okay. I support sending it forward and then for us to have a continued conversation about funding.
And we have applied for, you know, there's like a technical grant for like $5,000 that we've applied for through the county grant writers.
You may whittle that down a little
bit. Yeah, still working on, you know, getting additional funding this week.
But not providing you funding today is not going to stop this from going forward.
Well, yeah. No.
Hold on, I'm going to have Tamara go in the other room. We're going to have a talk.
I agree, moving forward.
Sounds good.
So WBS next week. It's not budgeted, so it does have to go on admin. So are you able to present?
On when?
Wednesday morning?
Yes.
Awesome.
Okay.
Great. Thanks for coming in, guys. Appreciate it.
I'd like you two to be there if you could, too, in case
I have every intention.
Okay. Great.
Always glad to sit with my favorite shuttle drivers.
Thank you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Don't wear your suit either. Next year.
All right. Next order of business, 2B, emergency management.
Or not to be.
FY 2020 State Homeland Security Grant Program.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Thanks for having me. This should be pretty simple. We are required through Oregon Emergency Management. Emergency Management is required to submit annually on behalf of other agencies the Homeland Security Grants. Two agencies have submitted projects this year. One is the Sheriff's Office for $304,689. For a new SWAT vehicle, a Bearcat armored vehicle, and Illinois Valley CERT for $12,777 for training and equipment for their CERT team. And so this is simply a request to allow me to submit the grant application to Oregon Emergency Management for review. The process will be once the grant applications are submitted, a review committee reviews the requests, and we should find out probably June or July if the grant projects were approved. Contracts will come out in October, and contracts would be made with the individual agencies that apply. So if the Sheriff's Office was successful, OEM would contract with the Sheriff's Office. If Illinois Valley was successful, then OEM would contract with Illinois Valley. So I am just simply the conduit to get the applications to the state and need your signature on the combined cover sheet to move forward with submittal.
Discussion, Commissioner?
So we get you're successful with the sheriff's grant for a SWAT vehicle. What's the cost of a SWAT team? Because it's not just, and you probably can't answer this.
I cannot.
But going forward, you have the SWAT vehicle. It's like having a jail and no funding to man it. And all of a sudden now it's, oh, well, we have to have two teams of five, 24/7, and that costs when we're barely up on patrol. Yes, I can't
answer that.
I can tell you that I had just got approved on the city's negotiations team. A couple days before Christmas in 2004, when all of a sudden our deputies responding to a domestic violence call found themselves in a standoff with one of our reserve deputies shot. And I was dispatching that night, and I was going to be pulled off to go negotiate. Our sheriff's team, without a SWAT at the time, was able to negotiate him how to deal with it. So what they did is they utilized current patrol to fill a function, because it's not that they were calling out city SWAT team to go, and they did go. And there's times they call out state police SWAT team, but there's times they need the vehicle for protection for cover as they may be in a situation. And so the vehicle itself does not dictate that they have to have a team. It's for the what if we found ourselves in a situation that we are under fire and on the stand down, and yet there's at the situation why they didn't leave at the time is there was a wife and daughter that were supposedly inside the house, so they had a safety concern of life that they had to stay. And so I would offer that as past experience. There was not a SWAT team at the time, but Sheriff Patrol at the time were in a situation where they needed protection as somebody, and then it ended up in a standoff, and thankfully was eventually peacefully resolved. But I've seen the city use that with their vehicle as well, where they had a situation where they drove the vehicle up to have protection from somebody who made threats with a firearm. And it wasn't a matter of that it was SWAT necessarily. It was what that vehicle offers is armor, essentially.
If I may, that is how the grant narrative is written. It is not proposed that the sheriff's office create a SWAT team. However, in the remote areas of the county, they don't always have protection from buildings. So it is written in such a way that it would be used as protection for their current deputies, and no proposal of a SWAT team is written into the grant.
Okay. Any other discussion?
My only curiosity is we got a cover sheet, but it's referring to pages of an application that would have those details, which we don't have.
The application is an online application this year. I can print off the pages and get you the details of the actual applications. We've done this differently almost every year. I'm happy to get you all the details of the grant applications themselves if you need that to move forward.
I don't.
Yeah, do we want to make a motion today to get the grant starting?
It doesn't have to go to WBS. You can, because this is just an application. There's a further contract that would come back later at the time that we receive the money that we would have to approve before WBS to receive the funds. So for today, you don't even, I mean, if it's a general consensus or if you want a motion for the sake of, you don't have to, but giving her blessing to apply is all that's required.
Well, I'm in favor of allowing her to apply for the grant.
So am I. I don't think it does need a motion, but...
There you go.
I just don't think I'm allowed to sign the document.
Okay, so. Then I would say make a motion for the chair to sign on behalf of.
I would like to make a motion that the chair sign on behalf of the whole board.
I'll send
the document that you will present to him today.
All right, I'll...
Within the next...
I sent one over, but you're welcome to have another one presented.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Lily?
I'm going to say aye for applying. I'm not sure what I think about the vehicle, but I...
But we get to look at that. Mm-hmm. If we get the funding, that's when we address the vehicle, and that it's going to be pink instead of blue, and that it's going to have a...
That will be between you
American
and the
American flag on the driver's door instead of passenger. That's all stuff that goes.
As long as it's waving in the right direction.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'd be an eye on that, too. So, motion carries 3-0.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bottom line or second to last? Looks like bottom line, right?
So the second line is your typed. The bottom line is your signature.
Right. I'll be going on other. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome.
On to 2C, which is Dave Streeter from Forestry, a grant of license for the Water Pipeline Route Works Incorporated in Josephine County. You want to do that one first?
Sure. Thank you. I don't have anything near as exciting as everything you've listened to so far this morning, but number one is basically a renewal of an existing easement that some folks have over a piece of our forest ground for a water pipeline that goes from a spring that's located on BLM lands. They run a pipeline across Josephine County lands to the residents. Existing, the only thing that has changed, obviously, it's a 5-year conditional easement. They have to meet certain requirements in it. And they pay the county $100 a year for each year that's on the easement.
What's our county land used for? Is it forestry?
It is forestry, yes.
So when and if we decide to log that, we do damage to their pipe?
In the easement itself says that they won't interfere with our ability to manage the lands as we see fit. And if they're told to remove it, because we are managing it, they have to remove it. And they can replace it after we're done. So, yes, there is clauses to cover those instances.
Okay. Any other questions on that one? The other one is Josephine County Tree Planting Contract. Yes, ma'am.
On this one, I'd make a motion that we renew the, sign the contract and renew the easement.
Second.
Yeah? Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay.
Just for the sake of clarity of why I did that, it's a $500 contract. Normally, that's something that he could cover if it was service, but because it's an easement, it's us. But for the amount, and it's renewing.
Yeah.
Correct. It is encumbering the lands, but there are ways out if things go south, for sure. I make sure of that.
If circumstances change.
The second item is our annual tree planting contract. This is for a contract to basically put about 200,000 of our next generation of seedlings into the ground and replace stuff that's been taken off the ground. And I think this contract's in the mid-$70,000 range, so it couldn't be handled by me and the liaison.
And 57 on
57,
yeah. So it was over the $50,000 liaison and director limit, so it had to come to the full board. If this one scares you, next year's will really scare you, because we're going to be putting in probably close to 500,000 seedlings next year from the Taylor fire. So just a contract that we go out competitive bid every year to put the trees in the ground.
Where do you get your vitamin B additive? It's in the contract.
Vitamin B?
B vitamin dipping water additive as needed.
So that is kind of a slew juice that we put on the landings. And bare root seedlings, they take like mycorrhizae and stuff and put it all into a slew juice, and they're required to take care of all of that, and then they dip those roots into that, put them in their tree planting bags, go out in the woods, and then put them in the ground. It's just kind of a prep. And it's not all the seedlings. Most of our seedlings are what are called plugs. So they're grown in a little container, and they've got a root ball on them that are like a cylinder. And they just go out and put a hole in and throw the tree in, and it's done.
How did they do that again to the drinker? Well, that one.
Do that 200,000
times.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's all I have.
Awesome. Move it forward.
Sounds good. Yeah, we can move those forward.
Then I presume you don't need me to come and present on Wednesday or anything.
I don't think so. Okay. No, you can maybe give Dan some info to present for you.
All right, thank you.
There ain't much, but there's enough. All right, item 2D, human resources. Review order number 2019-074 in the matter of administrative policies and procedures for Josephine County for the purpose of conducting business on a daily basis, the personnel policy. JJ?
Morning, Commissioners. Last Wednesday, the board asked to further look into the policy that was approved 2 weeks ago as relate to the decision to forego a 2.5% COLA in lieu of picking up the IIP 6% match. So really, I'm just here to answer whatever questions. I know Finance did give some more fiscal analysis on the decision, and really I just wanted to see what your questions were and see how that can reflect on either affirming the decision or changing the decision.
Right. This paperwork still says $47,000.
Well, $47,000 was the effect to the general fund.
Right.
When did you know the full effect of the total cost?
I think that was included in the same calculation as I think we had an estimate of total costs, and we presented the effect of the money that is ability to have any decision on. Most of the funds are dedicated funds, and so we wanted to give you, here's the effect on the non-dedicated funds.
Okay.
Okay, so we take, there's 6%, and then you would have we would have normally done a 2.5% COLA.
Yeah.
So that leaves it down to 3.5%. If that was an actual raise, you would have to pay, there's certain obligations from the county to match certain things to the employee.
There's roll-up costs of about 30% more than the 2.5% because, you know, taxes and PERS and all the various different costs.
Right.
Workers' compensation, FICA taxes.
Right, that's so what I'm getting at.
The dollar amount,
when you get them, when you add the whole thing together, what is the actual, you know, I know the courier said something like 460,000 or whatever it was, or 430 or whatever they said. That isn't entirely true if you take the 2.5 out, and then you take out all these other things that as an employer we have to pay. that we wouldn't have to pay if you just matched the six.
Yeah,
is there any calculation finding what the actual net is?
Yeah, I believe finance provided that to the board, and I believe it's $296,000 or somewhere around there.
Okay.
Countywide. If you look at the cost,
how much?
I think it was $296,000. You might have Sandy come up. She has the exact figures.
She's nodding, yes.
Yeah. And if you look at what does that cost as a percentage of our budget, it's 0.2% of our budget. So that's the effect it would have countywide.
Where did the options come from? And as far as advising you on what our options were, and I guess, because what's come to my attention afterwards is that there's, on the PERS page, there's specific instructions on what can be done and what cannot be done. And
so,
option three is not an option per state law.
So in option three, in the last week, Arthur did some research and looking what is the exact requirements under PERS. And the only way that we could implement option three is if we froze people's existing salaries. You could still do it. It would just be administratively burdensome. You couldn't actually reduce people's salaries and implement that. There's a provision within PERS that doesn't allow that. I actually wasn't aware of that. Arthur did some research and found that we're not allowed to actually do that. So we can't offset. We cannot give an increase. So not giving the COLA is permissible, but reducing salary and then picking up is not permissible under PERS rules.
So some of the other information from PERS is that if a policy is going to change, it actually has to have language saying why. That specifically that the required PERS employee contribution is deemed to be picked up for the purpose of IRC Section 414H2 and is assumed and paid for purposes of ORS 238A 3352B. So there's specific wording under on the PERS site as far as if you're changing from employee contribution types of certain things that have to be followed, that we can't just make a personnel change without making sure it meets the requirements in the ORS.
Yeah, I looked at the initial policy recommendation. I chatted with Wally, and we thought this was sufficient. Again, in the same paperwork Arthur looked up, you actually have to include specific language. So I would say the current policy that was approved there's nothing wrong with that policy, but we'd have to add another section in the end of the policy manual that spells out some specific ORS, because the PERS rules say you have to say these exact words, and then you have to give that policy to PERS in order to enact the change. So,
did you prepare a policy with that information?
I have all the language ready to do it. I haven't done it in advance because the board hasn't said do that.
Okay.
But I could have it done today. It's very easy. I have three or four examples of that exact policy language in the office right now, assuming the board wishes me to do that.
Commissioner Dia?
Getting back to all the nuances of it, what and we were told that we had go ahead. You get ready to slap my hand. There it is.
No, not at all. It's not you. I was about to slap my hand.
No, I just want to know. We were told that up in the DA's office, he interviewed four potential people and two of them because we are a county that does not put that 6% in for the employee.
Yeah.
How many... are we the only county or one of two counties out of the whole 36 that does it this way?
Can I interrupt you just to...
Yes.
I want to declare a potential conflict of interest because I am a PERS recipient, if it goes further.
Right.
Asking questions about what happened before, but I just want to make sure.
No problem.
Thank you. Keep going.
Sure.
So I did look that up yesterday, how many counties are not in PERS, how many counties are in PERS and don't pick it up. And there are... Let me see. I have it right here. There are... One, two, three. There are five counties that do not pick it up, and they're all in eastern Oregon. They are Crook, Hood River's not actually eastern Oregon, Harney, Malheur, and Sherman. And then Klamath County is a non-PERS county with the exception of their sheriff's department. And then within the sheriff's department, they have two work groups. They have general deputies, and then they have the sergeants. The sergeants do pick up, the deputies don't.
Okay.
So even with them, it's
hit and miss. Competitively, just along the western part of Oregon. Competitively, we are not in competition. If we want to get deputy DAs, and of course, we added a courtroom, and we still have people. Mm-hmm. I think I get just about as much as when is full-time patrol going to be in there as how come it takes so long to prosecute somebody. I get that probably 50-50 as to what's wrong with our system in Josephine County in comparison to Deschutes when the guy stole my, or not Deschutes, Douglas, when the guy stole my truck. 2 days later, I went up for the grand jury indictment. 4 days later, he had pleaded guilty after grand jury indictment, and he pleaded guilty, and 2 days after that, he was on the bus headed north for 20 months. He was sentenced and everything. Less than 2 weeks' time, it was done. And here, we can't even get close to that, which really actually costs us money in the long run, because we're having to house these folks out here, making no room for new people, new hires or arrivals that we get in our community. So it slows the whole system down. So, and then we get two of them that the DAs, the district attorney, said, boy, these were really good, I wanted these folks. And when they found out this element was in our procedure and policies, they went, no, we're out of here. And withdrew their application.
I can't say that's the only reason, but they specifically told us that was a primary reason. Maybe they wouldn't have taken the job either way, but it was a major factor.
A major factor.
They're down a number of positions, and this I would say that this is a concrete example of how we have a strategic disadvantage to some competitors within our regional and statewide.
If this thing goes to districts, I think that's the message that needs to come out in the news media, that this is why we're looking at it. If it was just, oh, yeah, because it makes everybody feel good and it gives them more money, that isn't it. We have recruitment and retention hurdle in Josephine County that no other county has, and we've had it for a long time. And we're you know, where do we place our money? Where do we invest our money that we get? Where do we invest that? And I think this is a good investment myself. I'll make the declaration. I am not on PERS, so I don't know if I need to declare that.
No.
I am not on PERS. I'm looking at this kind of from the outside looking in as John Q. Citizen walking down the sidewalk that doesn't have PERS. What are the hurdles that we have to face as a board to getting that DA staffed up there and then the jail and more courtrooms? How do we do that?
It's not just the DA. I've heard from some other departments, and one example, for instance, our juvenile department had a management position open that the tendency in the industry of juvenile services, which is DHS, Oregon Youth Authority, and juvenile departments, in the 36 counties, they all exist, and they swap people constantly.
Yeah, it's a rotation.
And so it's like
migration.
You'll find people that just swap between the agencies. And so when they put it out for that management position, the responses was the pay is okay, the benefits are okay, the PERS was not. And it took them 3 months to get somebody, and it wasn't somebody at the level that they wanted because they could not compete over this issue. And it should not have taken 3 months to fill that position with how the other trends in it is.
And there's other departments. We met with the department managers, and I said, hey, is this an issue countywide? And I can't say it isn't every department, but it isn't a number of departments.
Well, we had heard from an engineer that went to Jackson County, and he said the pay was similar, but it was a 6% difference over this, and that meant it was more pay.
We were this close to losing another one, and Rob worked his tail off to keep them. But it was, again, primarily this issue.
Do you have something to add, sir?
Similar to what JJ just said, is we don't have quite the not the retention issues that like the DA or the sheriff, because there's options right across the street, but we absolutely lost an engineering employee to Jackson County, and that was a deal breaker. We're probably 95% their salary. Kind of say, okay, maybe our health insurance isn't quite as good. Oh, and by the way, there's an extra 6% off the top there. Absolutely cost us one and almost cost a second one. And when we interview for these middle and upper managers, the folks are savvy enough, as we're kind of rolling through this spiel, to say, hey, here's the work schedule, here's what your job entails, here's what the health plans look like, by the way, you pay PERS. Oh, wait a minute, rewind that. What was the last part you said? I have to pay a 6%? Well, that's not what they're doing over across the street here, over in Jackson County. It is a terribly kept secret. And, you know, the employee policy says, shall make every attempt to come within 95 to 100% of salaries, which JJ does, usually means 96 or 7. So we're close there, but that not paying the PERS pickup, it never gets captured. So we are at a 6% hole right out of the chute. And I think the other thing that's important for the paper is this does not change our PERS liability. It does not change it one bit. I can tell you for our department, the 2.5% COLA, if we did that instead, had a cost. Changing to doing the PERS pickup is about $25,000 for my department. That is 0.4% of our personnel budget. And that's not including the roller cost you mentioned, Commissioner, so that probably lowers it to $15,000 on a $5.4 million personal services budget. Scott Chancey's in the same boat as me. He would have preached the same thing. Between us, we've got 90 FTEs. This is an easy operational decision for us to make from a retention standpoint.
And do you get your funding through property taxes, Josephine County property taxes? They don't come from state?
100% state gas tax gas and tax. Secure rural school source payments.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Any reason not to move it forward as it's presented?
Yes.
Well, what I would say is if you elect to move it forward, I will have to add an addition to the policy that was approved because the PERS requires some specific language. It's very easy for me to do that, but it would have to be an addition.
So it cannot be
right
moved forward
until we see that.
Yeah.
You can affirm what was already approved, but you have to have another policy addition. Is what will be required.
You need a motion to move forward or not? Just to
not yet. Not until it gets. We the see change. The completed version, right?
But to move it forward.
Well, there's language recommendations on the PERS website of what the language would have to be.
Yeah.
Right, and that's all we'd have to add in.
It would just have to be another policy change. So I would draft an order today, and then you could approve the order, and it would just the current language is. Appropriate, but there's some extra language you have to add per PERS rules.
So when the public hears $435,000 of cost to the county and why are we not hiring four deputies with that money, your answer is what?
My answer is that the vast majority of that, over 90% of it, is dedicated funds that you couldn't use to hire a deputy. So I can't use money that is generated for parks and use that in law enforcement. Over 90% of our county budget is required to go to the source the money is set for. So if I collect a fee in community development, I can't use that fee to pay for a deputy. I have to use it in community development. If I get a grant for public health, I can't use that grant money to pay for a DA. It has to be in public health. So the vast majority of the cost of this is isolated to the departments that are affected by it. And that's the reason that we gave the dollar amount of the $47,000, because that's the general fund effect. That's the money that you do have discretion to spend however you want.
Right, and is it not 400 and something? It was 296?
That's the actual effect of it, because there are some tax implications.
But the 496 is not all come. The 496 is coming from state gas tax money. Part of it, the 296, is coming from gas tax money. How much of that is coming from other sources that you have to
dedicated,
do it.
Right.
Dedicated, and only $47,000 is left out of 10.
And how much of this is fiscal year through the end of July, or is this annual?
Those are annualized numbers. So that's not even the...
It's not even showing what was budgeted this year, and then it's only 6 months left.
Mm-hmm.
So the number for the rest of the fiscal year is not what you're...
I believe it would be half of that. You have to double check the plan, but I believe it'd be half that. Because we're giving you, it was requested to what's the annualized cost of this? I believe that's what that is. I think, could be wrong on that, but I believe so.
Sir?
I think Commissioner Morgan's absolutely right, too. That's how it's going to get framed. Oh, you could have hired a blank number of deputies. I would walk right down there now and ask the sheriff, what's the cost when you lose somebody that just got back in the academy 6 months in and they walk out the door across the street? I promise you it's more than he will spend a year on that 6% pickup. Promise you. And how often does that happen?
Yeah. Good point.
These are all good points, and I don't know if we need to put forth a press release explaining exactly, because I don't know if it'll leave this room.
And we have two reporters that are here to collect
that's it. I'm pointing at the two reporters, because they'll pick and choose. Somebody will pick and choose what they want to hear and what they want to put out. And I want the whole story to go out. I want the entire snapshot of just exactly what Mr. Brandon said. Sandy Novak's back there. We were in the room, answered any questions, and this is the actual impact, where it comes from and why it goes that way, rather than saying that we're picking the taxpayers' property taxpayers' pocket for 490 something thousand or 60 something thousand. Nothing could be further from the truth. But I want the truth to be out there. That's exactly what I want. I don't know if we need to put together a press release from this office with JJ involved and collectively put out what is the actual truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, not leave anything out. I'm all for that. I don't know if that's what we need to do going forward, especially on this one. This is political. Highly political. And in an election year, I'm in. I'm all in. Because you know what? I like the people that work in this organization. I see the challenges to this organization by not doing something like this. We ask our people to get the best and the finest, and they want the best. The public wants the best and the finest. And then we have somebody pipes up and says, oh, but look what they're doing, and not tell the whole story. That aggravates the you-know-what out of me. So I want that whole thing out, and I'm all in. I'll vote. I can't tell how I'm going to vote right now, but I'm all in.
So where we stand right now is we approved a policy, and we made a motion to suspend that policy approval. You can make a motion to unsuspend it and continue as is. You can make a motion to scrap it and start from scratch. You can do different things because it was actually approved in a meeting and it's just on hold. So you have a couple of options of what you would like. I'm just going to tell you I'm going to abstain from voting. I should have stuck with my initial instinct. I haven't voted on things that have affected me.
Right.
And so I was under the assumption that I wasn't the only one affected, and I know it is a pool big enough that it's okay. It's not just me voting for me to get this. It's just a matter of, I mean, there's 105 employees in the pool, so it's not, or something similar to that, 100 employees. But my intent is to abstain. I agree that we're having recruitment issues, and it is an issue. And it'd even be okay, do it for everybody else but me. I don't have that option. So, right. So I'm letting you know that I think your options are that you can make a motion today, but I also intend to abstain, not because I don't want to help our recruitment, but because of I'm in the pool.
I'll make the motion that we continue.
We unsuspend
this with the amendment. I think you have to put some added language in.
I'll draft a second order that will include the required PERS language.
Right. Okay, I make that motion.
Okay, and I'll second that motion. Since you guys both went on the record, I'll say that I'm not in PERS as well. So it doesn't affect me in that regard. But I agree that the recruitment issue is something that we're still dealing with as a county after the troubling times we had in the early teens with budget and levies and had trouble recruiting and retaining our talented staff. And this is part of the climbing back out of that, I think, is fixing things like this.
Couldn't agree more.
I think it's appropriate. And I'm all for it as well. So those in favor would say aye.
Aye.
Those abstaining? Okay. And I would encourage you to get with...
Did you vote?
JPR. Yeah, I said aye first.
Oh, I thought you were telling us not asking to vote. Those in favor say aye. I abstain really nothing.
I feel like George Tweed out here. No man is an island, you know?
Yeah. And that was also
I meant
the motion
for that
were...
to be my eye.
Okay.
Yes. And I would encourage you to get with JP and craft a press release that details the facts. And that doesn't mean they'll make it into the paper, but we will do our best. Any further discussion?
I had a procedural question. Like, at what point will you decide an effective date? Because it cannot, PERS will not allow it to be retroactive. So when the policy comes forward, can we suggest some effective dates for you? That would be legal.
I think, we need to follow that.
So,
good advice.
Question
Thank
on
you.
That, though. The policy was originally approved in December Was it, and did it state that it would go into effect January 1st?
No, it said January 5th, and the reason for that is PERS doesn't allow you to have two codes on one pay cycle. So you can't have that you pick it up and you don't on the same pay cycle. So the effect of what she's asking is, if this is approved quick enough, then we can get it in the current pay cycle. If it's not, we have to wait till the next pay cycle.
So if they just made the motion and unsuspended it, it goes back to...
We have to file with PERS. We have to file the policy with PERS first.
Okay.
And if that's not done this week, it will not be effective January 5th.
So then when we get the updated policy, we will have to have an updated effective date is what you're saying.
Yes. Great. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Make it happen. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to give you guys a heads up, and one of the topics that's coming up is mine, but they announced at the White House telephone conference at 10:30 regarding NEPA policy changes, and so I registered to take part because I didn't have any warning before today. We got the email invitation today saying, can you take part? But
golly. So you may slip out?
Do you want to bug out of here in about 5 minutes?
Well, I could do it at 10:28, but one of the topics coming up is an RS-2477 road thing that I brought to the board as well, so I will try to figure out how to do both. But NEPA is something that we're closely following, Wally and I, with the Forest Service stuff, so I don't want to miss that information.
Understood. Okay, we're moved on to item 3, finance report and business update.
Sandy Novak, Assistant Finance Director. So back in May, y'all approved a policy approved for us to go out for an RFP for a new financial system. And we have created work groups, and the work groups have gone from all departments, small and large, and they have gone beautifully. We have gathered a lot of information. They've just about finished up their second round. We will be issuing the a request for qualifications tomorrow to narrow down the vendors. On Tuesday, Springbrook has announced again that they have been bought yet again.
Wow. So, I should have gone in the sign business.
They're keeping the name. They're actually have gone back to the name Springbrook from Acela. This afternoon I'll be in a conference to kind of figure out what's going on. We're not ruling them out. We're not ruling anybody out, but we are doing a request for qualifications. We want to know how often they've been sold, how stable they are, and those pieces of information, and then what they're providing so that the work groups can then begin interacting with them. And the beautiful thing is we are documenting how things are being done department level and central, and streamlining some of our processes and tightening up our internal controls during this whole process. And I think that we're going to really see some value.
Good. Commissioner Morgan?
I met with Eve RC yesterday, our treasurer, and again, with having a master plan of the county, of documenting what things are connected. She expressed specifically that she appreciates being a part of this process this time. The last time the software was updated, the finance brought it to the board who approved and never got that feedback from other implications. And she specifically expressed that she thinks the process is going well, and she appreciates that you guys have been intentional to keep her in the loop because it also impacts her software and her office. So I just wanted to pass that along and say thank you, because what I was told is two other departments had updates, and they would have gone with the same because they're linked, and they're not because there wasn't that communication either. And so that you guys have been intentional in doing this right, I just thought the other board members should know.
Nice.
It's important.
Further discussion?
Any questions?
No.
That is all I have for you, unless you have any other questions.
No.
Okay.
That was fast.
Thank you.
All right. Other business? Anything that should come before the board? It's not on the agenda.
Nope, not at this time.
Skipping on to number 5, board business, Chapel Hill Second edition, do you want me to move down to that road designation?
I'm just going
to
make a motion that we approve the Hillcrest Memorial Park plat map. Or, sorry, approve the Chapel Hill second edition Hillcrest Memorial Park plat map.
Second.
That's quite a mouthful.
I'll second that.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0. We'll get that signed. And then, matters from commissioners. Item 5B.
Well, none for me. I'd like to hear 6A.
Let's move to 6A then.
We can get
the resolution designated in RS-2477 Road.
Okay. So we have it. We had a miner who's had his family's had a claim for three generations out in the Illinois Valley, of which he went to do some improvements, has been having some issues with Forest Service. They've been tearing out roads out there to claims. And the request was that we have a coordination plan since 2015 that states no roads will be taken out except for safety matters. We also have a 1995 RS-2477 resolution, and they've asked for our help with the Forest Service trying to limit access and put fencing across right-of-ways to existing current claims. And so this was a map provided, and it is...
we started on this?
Yes. Oh, good. But this is showing 52, 54, 1927 information. So the key to RS-2477 is it has to be on the map before 1976.
I'm going to reboot the entire conversation.
Please.
Since last we talked, yes. Good morning, all.
It didn't go very far.
It didn't go far. Yeah.
I just said that we were asked to intervene and help.
You were. And so if you go further down, this actually came from the assessor. This is the map that the citizen provided. This map has been in the assessor record since 1954.
Okay.
And if you're able to zoom in, either visually or if Wendy's able to do that, on the section 7 here, which is the one at issue.
To zoom on here, I think you have to do the three dots to the zoom.
It may or may not be possible. But
yeah.
I like the coffee stain in the corner.
Kirby Clark.
Some things never change.
Well, you don't know how old that coffee is. Are you sure it's not sooner than
I have a test.
It may come down to a testing situation.
I think our coffee's more.
That, my friend, is an old map.
This one is old. This is from 96. And this came from the citizen. This didn't come from our assessor's office, but originally it was produced by the Forest Service. And let me just find a way to lay this down. Here we go, and that would work fine. All right, so what's happened is, and I didn't speak with the citizen, Commissioner Morgan did, but so definitely interject if I'm getting the situation incorrect, but essentially, we might have to do some hovering over the map.
Here's his claim.
Yeah.
Here's his connection to, is it $8 or Illinois River Road, whichever one that is. And essentially, they fenced off right there, cutting his access to his claim.
They've all,
yeah, and there's an existing dotted line going up to it that's
I see it back
that's exists. Mm-hmm. You know, they have it listed as, where's the dash? Either a trail or something else like that. But they provided, we got some information on RS-2477. It protects right-of-way. If they've ever walked the path or anything, that is protected. But it is a documented road. And the problem is on this one, going all the way back out, they've taken this portion out. So for some reason, they're up there and taken, and not just fencing across, but then taking a machine and tearing up the middle of the road.
Yeah, they rip it.
And they asked, are you letting the people know who have the claims up these roads that you're doing this? They said, no, when they get here and see the fence, well, they can contact us. And right. So some of these people that own these mining claims literally don't live in the area. So they'll get a week or two off. They'll come to Oregon to go check in on their mining claim, and they get to it and it's fenced. They can't mess with the fence or be charged with obstruction of government property. And there was no notification to them that they're bearing it off. Now this one,
right.
He's got active stuff all the way in here, and here's his claim up here. So this is where they've boarded off, and he's asking for us to help with sending a cease and desist to the Forest Service.
Are they berming that, or are they actually, if they're going to destroy the road, they don't gate it?
Cross fences across there, not even gates. Okay. They're putting fences.
Well, because it starts out as a four-wheel drive road, according to this, unimproved four-wheel drive, two dashed lines, and then it turns into a trail.
But part of their process with the easement is they actually have the lawful right to maintain those roads and upgrade those roads.
They have the requirement to maintain the claim, or they lose it. So this is just basically setting them up for failure. You can't get to your claim, they go, you didn't improve your claim. You need to go.
I need to go get on that White House call for the NEPA regulations. So,
okay. Well, before you go, so is this road, this black one here that we can see, is that gated off, or is there?
It's gated on his side.
On his side, I see. But people can still traverse that road. It's 41.
Yeah, that's $8 mountain.
That's a big
$8 mountain road. Yeah,
approved road that people go out all summer long.
Okay, good. Okay, now I understand that. So it's just this road slash
trail.
So road. I support us supporting helping.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. That's important in the analysis. All right. So what we've got then is actually in Section 8. So if you look at this map, you can see it very clearly shows the same road.
Right.
That's what the map looked like in 1956.
Right.
So looking at, yep. And so examining what Commissioner Morgan has identified there.
Right here.
Right.
Starts up there, and then it becomes a trail.
Right. Becomes
according
a trail
to this newer map.
According to
his newer map, exactly. So the question then becomes whether this was in existence prior to 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Starts out as dirt because it's a double line, segmented line, and that's dirt.
Dirt.
Okay, starts out as dirt, and then back right about in here, it becomes a trail.
According to the 97.
According to the 97.
Right, but here, it looked more like a road. Right?
Well, let me see. So I just got that last night close to 5 p.m.
This
from the assessors who did all the ones work.
Could you scroll up and get the legend on that?
So, and Pat, thank you very much. This would be a draft resolution.
There's that big wowie in the road.
Before
1463.
Well, let's see what their act out thing is. Jeep trail and what their, see, this is that road right there.
I think section 8, if you can kind of scroll upward.
Starts at 18. Or starts at 13. Okay, I want to know what that means.
Right. Have we found the legend on the corner of this map?
I think we're going up, so directly above square 17 would be 8. Oops.
Hold on
here.
Jeez. Okay.
Have a seat.
Okay.
There we go. And then upward a bit.
Upward?
There it is, yeah. Up and just a smidge more. There we go.
Like, so it's here's within, the road.
Yeah. So section 7 is and 8 are the same. On that map is on this, and his gate is on section 8. So the road is 4103, and that's very clearly shown. And that thing that says what Cedar Gulch sure looks like.
This comes from down here to get to there.
Why am I getting lost in between?
Yeah, it's the same. The numbers are the same within the squares.
Ah.
So that's 8 there.
So
it's
definitely
an
8. Because I'm confusing the river for the road.
Yep, right. So my eye looks like it's there.
Right? It's 1463, right?
Yeah.
And that's the dark line. It's not even dashed on this. As a road that goes up into 5.
Into 5? Yes, it does.
Yes, it goes up.
It goes up into 5, and then his claim's in 6.
Ah, so it has to go around and get into there.
Yeah. It looks like it's actually got a name, Sand. Is it Sandback? Oh, that's a creek.
Snailback.
Creek, okay. So.
And Cedar Gulch.
And I'll get the professional opinion on this one, by the way, before
I feel like a road trip's in order.
Go down.
Let me go get my old truck, because it'll get in there, and my new one won't.
So
we'll take yours.
Huh?
We'll take your car.
It's going to hover over there.
Sunburn.
Right.
Well, it's hard to say.
This is more of a gulch road. I'm not seeing that road.
Well, it's just a trail is all it is by the time it gets there. It's not a road.
True. A right-of-way, however, is protected.
It's a right-of-way. Even if it's a trail, it's still...
And I'm all for pushing back on these roads.
I am, too.
And I don't know if it's on this map.
Yeah, I don't... Now that I know what I'm looking for, I didn't have a chance to confirm.
And one of the things...
This is like a creek, a gulch, Cedar Gulch.
Commissioner, did you have...
Yes, sir.
Did you have a segment at County College about access to public lands and that they have all kinds of grants for access to public lands and BLM and the U.S. Forest Service? Well, they probably took it out after our group was in there because I said, all you need to do to give us access to public lands, oh, yeah, we'll help you out. Listen, send us about 10 pairs of bolt cutters. All you're doing is blocking off access with gates.
Well, we
don't get any access anymore.
We have no more talking about here. So.
Yep.
All right, so here's our map of
97.
There's right there.
Yep. There's the crossroad. That's where this road crosses the road, this X here. BLM 1463 goes this way, but not that way. And on here, it doesn't go.
Yeah.
There's no road on that map.
I don't see a road on that map either. Okay.
So this is our evidence then.
I think
the road goes a ways in.
And that it went in there prior to, so therefore it's just dead.
Right. I don't see it on, well, that's the 1956 map. And so it doesn't.
It has to be prior to 76.
Yes. It's got to be prior to 76. And I'll get the pros downstairs to weigh in on whether they see a road there too. But they provided that map from the assessor's office. They were able to dig it out. So it's reliable, but what it looks like to me is that the road appeared sometime between 1956 and 1996, and we don't know whether it was there before 76.
So we need to find another map from 1970.
That's the
real trick.
That's the best we got, though.
This is the...
It was amazing they were able to find that.
Yeah, sure.
Who's they?
Assessor's office.
Okay, let's go to the Forest Service. They're the maps. They're the archives.
Forest Service is claiming they have the right to shut it off.
Yeah, but if they've got the maps, they went back and changed documents. They have a tendency to do that.
Yep.
But if you go in and find an old map, from the 70s,
we can put it
76.
Yeah.
1976. I didn't kind of spend that time because I have a lot of Forest Service maps from way back when.
Okay.
I'll be glad to look.
Good. Okay.
So let's put that back on a future agenda when we have some more information.
I'm all for supporting this.
Okay. And that's what we were looking for.
As long as we have the evidence.
As long as we have the evidence. We're going to continue to look for the proper evidence to go after it. But we're in support of it.
Okay. So that was 6A.
Yes, it was.
Hey,
okay.
Don't take my map.
Yeah. I didn't bring that. That's not related. Okay.
That's not you.
All right.
6B is a MOU with the City of Cave Junction for downtown improvement projects.
Yes, and we'll all note that it has draft very clearly written there. So nice. Hopefully no one will get confused as to where things stand on all this
matter. But I haven't really had a chance to go through it. Is there some highlights?
No, this is just the presentation. There are the highlights. We're going to cover those, and then we're going to bring it back and call it a week or two, whatever the board feels.
So all the red line that we've got here is changes you've made.
That's right.
And just clarification language. We didn't change the actual meat of it.
I wouldn't say so.
I didn't get any of it. It seemed to me we were protecting both of our interests by adding language that was pertinent to a legal document.
There's that, and I mean, the idea is that we're clarifying the arrangement as in if they wanted a phased approach.
Right.
And so the MOU doesn't currently reflect that. And
right.
So it seemed to be the desire of both
when do
parties
they,
to do that.
When do they interject their phased approach? We just approved the MOU, which gives them the ability to start forth on the project. But then they have to present their phased approach, and then we approve that?
They did. That was my observation, that they have. Okay. And so what they presented is I've attempted to reflect within this draft.
Okay. Right.
Okay, but we didn't take that their phased approach out of this, did we?
No, we interjected it in.
Put it in.
Okay.
Yep.
Phased approach wasn't in. That was the problem. The phased approach wasn't in the original.
Yeah, their proposed project implementation didn't fit with the MOU, so we're fixing it.
There we are.
Okay.
Right.
That sums
Thank
up what's
you.
Going
That's
on.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, and while I was at it, sure, I changed a couple of, I clarified a few points that would be non-controversial, non-substantive.
Right,
almost,
trying to take them out.
Yes, exactly, and to clarify.
Right.
I guess we can just work with the red line here, if there are copies available.
Do you have a red line?
Yeah, I do.
Right, good, and that's what I have as well. And the red line is only helpful up to a point, so I'll make sure we don't miss anything there, but... So we just clarify here in this first paragraph that the public improvements are going to be lighting, public appearance, and security. And I just reordered those. They had been to line them up with the phases,
right?
The three phases, you know. And so that we have that done. And then we had to clarify this MOU revokes and replaces all prior agreements between the parties regarding the subject funds, which were gained from the sale of the former CJ building. So this is going to be the new one that replaces the former one. And then going down to that next paragraph, we see that the date of completion is within 1 year of the date last signed below. I thought that was basically where people were headed with that. So mm-hmm. That's not hard and fast. But then we got our three phases reflected in the next paragraph that I added. The parties agree the project will proceed in three phases. Lighting improvements, which they're ready to go on. Public appearance, which they're moving on. And then security, which was the piece that they needed to work a little bit more on. Need a little more time to work with.
Mm-hmm.
They did arrive with and present the implementation plan. And so since that seemed to be something everyone was getting behind, I just attached it to this MOU as an exhibit. And that'll be an efficient way of just saying we all know what we're getting into
that's
here.
Wise.
So,
yes, you know, wow, we didn't know what we were finding.
Yes.
Now you do.
So you'll see the implementation plan.
Oh, we all agree on the implementation.
It's all red.
It's really red.
It's really red. Now, I reordered basically a lot of that so it would line up with the phases.
With the phases.
And
nice.
We'll walk through what the implementation plan looks like. Yep. And it should look very familiar to everyone who's seen the one that they presented, but just a little more appropriate for our purposes. So then I reordered. You can see within the MOU back onto page 2, we got our three phases. We got phase 1, which is now lighting improvement. And phase 2 is going to be public appearance. And then phase 3 is the security upgrade. As far as the public appearance, this would be something to clarify with them, but that last piece, so they're estimating it's going to cost, in terms of the money, $140,000 to $250,000. And then the amount recommended from sale revenue is $105,000. I'd really get with the city and figure out what numbers they truly have in mind on this.
Right.
I just left in there essentially what was already there, but this is a point that I
think let's leave it at $105,000 because that's what they brought to us, I think.
Well, I think, but I would encourage you to revisit, just figure out exactly
right.
what it is they want
that
to say.
That would be a correction they would bring back if it's different from the $105,000.
Yes. Yes.
If we left it at $105,000 and they say, yeah, that's what we did, then it stays there.
There we go.
If they have some change, when they come back after looking at the draft, they may have some changes.
Yeah, that's fine.
And that could be one.
And then I've added a plus after the estimated private partner commitments because it seems like they could go all the way to $250,000. And then looking at the numbers here, we're really going to just really need some clarity from the city is down in that paragraph 3, Josephine County shall, and then we've got to commit the total of $155,000 to be available for planning design of the project. And then I've clarified here what I think was meant to be said, which is that in D, county shall assign up to $50,000 of the total $155,000 as matching funds to private businesses. And then in terms of the ratio, I went with the best information available, but got to revisit that with the city to figure out truly what is they're envisioning, because we've got the matching funds shall be awarded at a ratio of 1-3 for lighting improvement and then 1-1 for public appearance and security.
Okay.
Leave it there.
Seem to be, yeah. I mean, that's what we're sending over to them. Yeah, they may say, no, that's not what we meant.
If they have a problem with that, they'll say something.
There it is. So, yeah, but that's just something we're going to want to...
I think they could use the guidance from the county. I think
Yeah, and it's nice to have it all ironed out, and then we could talk about changing it.
Yes.
Right? And, you know, instead of leaving it open.
I think the message the message here is that, you know, because I think we had an editorial in the paper the other night that, oh, they sold that building out there out from underneath the people at Dave Junction. This right here clarifies all that this is what we're doing with it. I mean, right, the money was all going back to Cave Junction.
Yeah. The county didn't take the money and run.
No.
Right. It's going right back.
But if you read the editorial, you know, boy, we're commissioners. Why? You did that without deferring. And all the time we've been in conversation with the city of Cave Junction for rather than a building, you know, 100 foot of street frontage, we're doing the whole.
Yes.
Very comprehensive. Put that money towards something that everybody can use rather than just community.
This is an exciting project.
It is.
This comes to fruition.
Really
this
is
a that's really what we want to do.
Productive use of that revenue.
Divest ourselves of something that, you know, goes back to the place where it,
Yes. So
move it over.
So all right. Okay. Let's now turn to Exhibit A. What is now Exhibit A, which is the implementation plan. And based on the discussion, I identified the three phases that everyone was kind of agreeing on, which is lighting upgrade, public appearance, and security, as I described. You know, a lot of this just basically was a copy.
Whatever.
Right.
Just sat there and typed what was in there. I didn't happen to have the Word version of that particular document. We had the Word version of the other one, thanks to your staff. And so anyway, that's what we've got reflected there. You'll see that the matching funds in business projects, that's a 1-to-3 matching program, $750 cap for each individual match. I think you might have proposed that.
Yeah, that was their proposal.
That was their proposal. Okay, so that came from a source. I'm not saying that's hard and fast. That's just on the paper. And then the chart of areas to be illuminated. Just I tried to type that exactly as it was already. Nothing changed there. And then we've got phase two. And I did cut out a little bit of some of the history on the public appearance. So the city of Cave Junction may want to reinsert that. They basically said there was an engagement with the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce hosted an event in August of last year. Citizen participation was kind of gleaned from that event. But I thought, well, that might be a bit distractive. And so that's absent from this draft. But this says what everyone thinks, what everyone needs to see, in my opinion. But anyway, so they may want to see some change there. But basically, the heart of it is in the third paragraph, in terms of that phase two, the city shall identify businesses that are eligible for matching funds of a ratio of 1-to-1, up to a total match of 1,000. I think that was the number that people were talking about. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want a different number. They'll have to get back to us with that. And then that'll assist with the implementation of the public appearance projects. And then preference shall be given to projects that are adjacent to Redwood Highway. The other sites within the city limits will be eligible.
If they put out the word on the businesses eligible for matching funds ratio 1-to-1, and they only get 3, do they have a budget for that business improvement? In other words, if they put together $15,000, and they only have 3 people, then they're only going to use $3,000 out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Does the other 12 stay in a ongoing?
Great question for the city.
An ongoing, you know, if they want to leave that,
yep.
We're going to give it to them, and they would then marshal it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm okay for that.
Yeah. So.
Because I think as you get a business, the 3 of them say yes. And everybody, well, I didn't want to offer to me. Yeah, well, we have funds available. It's kind of like those grants that we used to have.
The community block grants.
Downtown improvements. There, but nobody ever applied for them.
Mm. Right.
We had to get really creative. But I think if we give them that money and just leave it in there and they can
promote manage it themselves.
Right. I think that's the vision at this point.
Yep.
I think that's their plan.
I'll clarify that with the city, but that's up to them.
It does bear clarification with them. So, and then the security upgrade, of course, that's going to be the last phase, and we are all familiar with the reasons for that. And so basically we've got falling behind. Yeah, security upgrade. Here we go. So I just used the same language. They've got 8 active and 2 spare cameras that the city's going to put up. And then we've listed the locations there. And then in the business security portion of that, which is paragraph B, we got that 1-to-1 ratio again. And then it says businesses may receive matching funds. I think this is where they were going with it, but I guess we'll need to ask them for clarification. But businesses may receive matching funds for each individual camera that gets installed on the premises. I think that's where they were going, as opposed to each business gets 1-to-1, but
right.
Trying to clarify. So that'll be an area that bears some discussion and clarification with the city. And then the maximum amount of matching funds per camera will be 1,000.
Yeah, for the whole system. Mm-hmm.
So we have in here somewhere that if between now and the next year, all of a sudden they've undershot,
mm-hmm.
we're not going above and beyond this amount. The limit is 155 out of that sale.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. The MOU.
Well, 155 is not going to get everything done we need, then you really need to get creative with how you're going to do that.
Still went towards supporting the valley. Improving.
Exactly. It's what we said we were going to do, correct?
Well, we were led to believe the public was much more involved in the discussion of the sale of the county building than we learned afterwards it had been. And in result, we wanted the money to go back to the valley to support efforts out there, and so that the sale of it helped the valley. So if it costs more, but we've provided matching grants and we've provided support to get as many there, I think we've done our due diligence to get them further down the road. And there may be other grant opportunities like the Main Street, like Ford Family Foundation and different programs that potentially can help them go further. But this gets it so much further down the road. With this timing of the Sheriff's Office going to 20-hour patrol, I fully support us moving forward with this. Does this impact, I know we needed to update the MOU, does this impact the implementation plan or does this cover it enough?
This puts them in one document.
It does.
Okay.
Yep. Implementation plan is Exhibit A. Yep.
Got it.
So that's one of the little changes we made.
In reading this in the very last paragraph of the whole thing, maximum amount of matching funds available per camera shall be 1,000. I think that should be per business.
Oh. Per location.
Yeah, per location.
So thinking, oh, well, I want 6 cameras.
Yeah, and that so it caps out at 1,000 matching per location because that's too much for one camera.
But if the business the business says I want 4 cameras, well, we're going to pick up one, maximum of 1,000, and maybe they get a lower grade camera and they use $1,000, but they get 4. But we're stopping at 1,000.
We're stopping at
per location.
Yep.
The only concern I have with that is if the city's asking, oh, wait, this is the individual businesses.
Individual businesses.
Okay, so this is the city saying, I want 2 here and facing different directions.
No, that's the first A paragraph
in
phase 3, not the B.
Yeah, and what the city provided for the implementation plan went there, but I've made it clear.
Has this gone to CJ yet?
No, he was running it by us first, and then it's going to head out to them.
Great.
Yep, I think it's great. And give them some time to look at it before we have a meeting, say, in February, and we're able to talk about it with them.
Okay.
I'll make that change. And we'll,
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll make that change and send it off to them.
Okay. Sounds good.
And then if you could, I think you need to bring Lily up to speed on our map and what we found.
Yes, okay.
We can do it after.
You can do it after.
Unless it changes a vote or something.
No vote is made. Well, where we're at. Sorry?
Just bringing it up to speed as to dating on the maps versus the requirement for being the requirement.
We knew this map that was provided by the person was made in 96, but had details from 27. But the one that we had on the screen was in the assessor's office sooner.
But there's no road on that.
But there's no road on that one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No trail or anything.
Interesting.
So we need to come up with something.
Okay, we need to follow up.
Prior to 76, you said?
76.
Yeah, so we need a map from 75.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll ask Google.
What's interesting to me, though, is that this is from the Forest Service, and they've labeled it as having the information from these other dates.
True, right. Without going outside of not to claim that I know what I'm talking about, but talking with assessor's office yesterday, it sounds like this is a reflection of the compilation of data that's been piled on top of each other to get to this point in time.
Okay.
So yeah, they're
and that one only shows a four-wheel drive road going a couple hundred yards, and then it turns into a trail. So that may not be our best.
Can you take a look at that stuff I sent you from Tom?
I read it. I read it.
Was there anything about the right of way and it not having to be simply a road?
Oh yes.
Okay.
He's accurate on that point.
So it doesn't matter if it's a road or a
trail. It doesn't matter what the designation is.
The right of way is protected.
So that could be our map then.
No, because this is still 96. So.
Oh, right. We got to find the 476.
Is there any requirement when you get a claim, like his mining claim back up here, and he applies for that claim, is there any implied portion of that that says you have access to that claim? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I would go. I mean, you can't. It's like we can't block access to a person's property. We have to provide access.
We can still send a letter saying cease and desist closure of any right of ways to active claims.
Regardless of when the road is put
in. But they have to listen to us is another question.
Right.
But it's still documentation, and we say we're a coordinating agency. We have a coordination plan from 2015, say no further closures. This year, you guys have been putting fences up. Mm. They're getting me pictures of the fences. Mm. Please cease and desist.
I'm looking at the fact that at some point in time, whether it be before 76 or after 76 or whatever, they put this trail came in here to his mine. Now, did they, they recognize it as /Jeep Road and then trail after that. Did they follow his footpath into his own claim?
Who, the Forest Service?
Yeah. Well, or did they make this trail going into his claim?
Well, and here's the thing. The 1976 restriction is only for RS-2477 roads. That designation is the only place where that comes into place.
Oh.
Our coordination.
So access is a different question.
Correct.
To be, probably decided by a federal authority.
But we, as a coordinating agency, have in our coordination plan that no roads will be taken out. So we have current active that they're blocking off access to roads of active claims, of which they are mapped and existent. We can say they have right-of-way access. He's asking for RS-2477 protection because he claims his family, he can show the documentation of how long he's had access because of how long they've had the claim. I've heard Forest Service say, well, show us on a map before 76. I've also heard the Forest Service went to the Historical Society and picked up all the maps and then lost them.
Well, that's not good. Yeah, Assessor said maybe the Historical Society would have the maps, but if that's...
It's known that the Forest Service picked up the maps and borrowed them, and then they didn't return them.
Oh, bad. Wow. That's bad. All right. Yeah, well...
Well, I'm definitely on the side of these... people with claims.
This is not a good the example. Only one. He's the guy just bringing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says there's other ones they're tearing out there, including the bottom portion of this that goes back to the highway. That's something they've used, and so, and that they're not notifying the claim owners that they're taking away their access.
Not to mention the coordinating agencies.
Correct.
Right. Which is that's part of the county's nexus on this.
Correct. Yeah.
Given the evidence is.
But like I say, isn't it, there's a requirement that they maintain their claim and work their claim, and then you deny them access to it, you're setting them up to fail.
That'd be a due process.
It's just crazy. It's almost like we're going to figure out how we're going to jump this claim for you, and we're going to do it by access law or access authority.
This is the real heart of RS 2477. This is from the Congressional Record of October 23 of 2000 that a citizen sent us, and just an excerpt says, "Nothing in FLIPMA allows the Forest Service to usurp control over right-of-ways existing prior to October 1, 1976, or to change the definition of a road which has existed prior to 1976. And then it says Congress clarified the issue in 1996, and that bill said, no final rule or regulation of any agency of the federal government pertaining to the recognition, management, or validity of a right-of-way pursuant to RS-2477 shall take effect unless Congress takes further action. So that's
they
where
did.
They're no, no. So that's where they're hanging their hat.
Right.
So it's anyway. Well, all right. We'll really take it from a different tack based on the evidence and send a resolution or a letter to the Forest Service regarding coordination.
Yep.
And that may be about as good as we can do at the moment.
Can I refer the citizen to you as well if he's asked questions about this?
Yeah, I can answer some. I mean, if it delves into the area of seeking legal advice, obviously I can't go
there.
But
I mean, as far as, okay, this is what we found of why this map and that map, you know, that kind of thing. So he might have other documentation. But it might be easier that... Okay.
Talk directly.
Send him to him.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Glad to make it back. That's the end of our agenda. Is there anything to share?
As a matter of from commissioners, the phone call, there's a 60-day comment period for the CEQ, which is doing the policies about some NEPA changes, which is meant to modernize, simplify, and quicken the process. And so I would ask that we look at that and take part in commenting in the 60-day period.
Absolutely.
And I can probably work with you, Wally, to look at those since you and I have been dealing with the other one. So.
Yes.
Excellent. Any other business? Okay, then. Let's end this meeting at a nice even 11 o'clock.
Thank you.